It's time for Toronto's Top Line.
I think Matthews has probably taken over the reins as the most popular, most talked about, most well-known person in the city. There are so many 34 Maple Leaf jerseys in the city right now. It's astonishing to me that it's this big this quickly.
This is Overdrive on TSN 1050.
Overdrive continues live from BMO Field ahead of a big game tonight. Argonauts playing host to the Grey Cup champion Red Blacks. Brian Hayes, Gordon Miller here until 7 p.m. But the man of the hour.
The man of the week.
Man of the week joining us around the table. He is CFL great, NFL great, NCAA great. Looking good, man. Doug Flutie around the table. What's up, Doug?
Not too much. It's
surfing?
Fun. Surfing, yeah. I'm living down in Florida, being a surf bum. Took my buddies. We all went down to Costa Rica, catching these double overhead waves, getting killed and having a blast. And that's kind of kept me young and kept me in shape without beating me up too bad.
So knowing you compete at it.
Oh, yeah.
See,
you need your competitive fix. I still play adult league baseball with my brothers. We play these tournaments. But surfing thing has been awesome.
And the Flutie brother, when you see the Flutie brother, now I've only seen two of you and Darren. Ridiculous how competitive they are.
When we do the adult league baseball stuff, my older brother Bill is a Division I baseball player. He's third base. Darren's at short, and I'm at second. And it's on. It's like, let's go. Let's play. And it's just a blast.
How do you compete surfing, though?
No, I don't. I don't. There actually are competitions. There's all kinds of stuff going on.
But you got to fight guys for a good wave.
See,
right?
And I argue with the guys all the time. I'm like, well, you guys just communicate. Every other sport I play, people communicate, right? You talk. You know what the other guy's thinking. Let's go. Okay, you go. No, not on a wave. They shut their mouth and they pretend to take the wave, so you back out. And then it's like, look, just communicate here. There's plenty of waves for everybody. Just talk to me. Nobody rode that last wave, and it was beautiful because you had to.
He's worked up. I like it, man.
Yeah. This is what I'm looking. I wasn't expecting surfing hot takes out of the gate, but I'll take them. Are you one of those guys, you look back, you were a great football player, but you feel like you could have been greater at a different sport?
I always thought basketball was going to be my sport. I had like Division II and Division III offers for basketball, and I got my one Division I offer in football. So the opportunity became football. It kind of chose me. But, you know, growing up, I thought my height would hurt me more in football than it did in basketball because I could be a point guard and distribute the ball.
Right.
But, you know, you move up to each level, and the game was still the same to me, and I know everybody else was telling me I was too short to do what I was doing, but it just all worked out. It kind of chose me. Football chose me.
Did that drive you or did it bother you?
Oh, it drove me. I think when I talk to young players and when I talk to young kids, I say there's got to be something that makes you, you know, coaches always say, get better every day.
Right.
Well, there's got to be something that drives you to do that. There's something in my upbringing. For me, it was everyone telling me I wasn't big enough and also we grew up with nothing. I had nothing. And I didn't want my life to be that way. And that was always sitting there in the back of my mind. And that always kept me driven. So that on a daily basis, it gave you a reason to get up and work out or go study or do whatever. And, you know, for everyone, it's different. It's different motivation. But you have to have something like that that gets your butt out of bed. You can't. And a lot of kids today, and I've got very close friends or nephews that are this way. They need their parents to wake their tail up out of bed and get them to go do something. It's got to come from the kid.
Yeah.
So you're saying, though, you could probably pick off early in a kid's life whether or not he or she is going to make it based on that push, that internal push?
I think you see, not definitively, but yes, you can see that this kid is self-motivated and driven, and it's going to take that. Get through high school. High school, you can get by on just being the best athlete and being athletic and going out there.
Right.
And then you get to college, and all of a sudden, everyone's got that kind of athleticism. And the difference is the guys that want it the most and are driven on a daily basis. Everybody come game day, walking out on that field, everybody wants to win the same way. It's who invested the most time during the week. Who wants it most on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday? And that's the guy that when he steps out on the field has the most invested in that week, and they're the last to surrender. You know, he who invests the most is last to surrender. If you haven't worked hard at something, it's easy to quit in the fourth quarter.
So I'm curious. You came to the Canadian Football League in the early 90s, and and really made a name for yourself and got back to the NFL because of it. The biggest change, one of the biggest changes that no one's talked about in the last 15 years for the Canadian Football League is when the NFL expanded practice rosters. And most teams put a fourth quarterback on the practice roster. Mm. You might, in today's game, might have gone to a team on the practice roster, you know, sat there and not played. Would you advise a young quarterback now and say, go play in the Canadian Football League, like play?
I have always, you know, if you, it's hard to say, like, if you're in an NFL camp and you have that opportunity to be around that, then the coaches can see you on a daily basis. But if a couple years go by and you haven't seen the field, yes. Because the experience of being on the field, of game situations, of pressure situations, of play calling, situational football, you've got to be in the mix. You've got to be getting better and growing. You can only grow so much when you're watching film and watching other guys do it. And that was kind of the point where I had played 5 years in the NFL. I got released by New England. I had a couple teams talking to me, and I was already labeled as a backup in the NFL. And I wanted a chance. I didn't think I'd play till I was 43. I thought, you know, I was 28 years old. I've only got a handful of years left. I want to play.
Right.
And that was the motivation behind signing in British Columbia and coming. I want to be a guy on the field. I want to pull the trigger.
And the funny thing was, for several years after you were released by New England, the Boston Globe on Monday would run whoever the Patriots quarterback's stats were, and then Doug's side by side.
The CFL right? stats yeah, compared yeah. to the NFL
like Doug
ones.
Doug flew through for 400 yards and, you know, five touchdowns this week. Our guy, you know, got picked off four times and they lost, you know, 27-3.
You know, my wife was smiling every time she saw stuff like that.
You know it.
No one smiled more than my dad at that kind of stuff.
Right. Doug Flutie joining us around the table. Did you sense, though, like, based on what Gord just said, that the media and the fans, specifically in New England, you went to BC, you were kind of a legend growing up in the city and New England in general, that they always believed you could play in the NFL?
No doubt about it. I mean, my years in the 80s, the late 80s, when I started playing in the NFL, I had a great winning record with the Patriots, you know, the games that I played. And they kept making the other guy the guy and the fans. I became a headache for management and coaches because if I was in New England, I had to be the starter or I should be gone in their mind because otherwise I create a problem for their starter. And so the fans always believe, you know, that's the one thing. Everywhere I played along the way, the fans were amazing. The fans believed in me and more so than I did myself sometimes. You know, one thing I've been talking about a little bit the last couple of days was the fact that when I came to Toronto, we had a lot of fun here. And Don, it stemmed down from Don.
Right.
And Don Matthews kind of reinstilled all the confidence in my own decision-making for myself. Like, I really trusted my judgment on the field and my play calling. All that. So when I went to Buffalo, my confidence level, he springboarded that and helped make what I did the next 8 years possible.
I got to tell the story about you in Boston. So it was 95. I looked it up. It was the 95 playoffs. I was doing a Bruins series, had a day off. And so I called Doug and said, why don't you come to the game? So we went to this playoff game. This is the bad old days. Like the Devils won the Cup that year.
Right.
Right. And like they trap. And in the third period, real quiet in the building. It's the old Boston Garden. And guy yells out, hey, Doug, we need a miracle. Lace him up. And the crowd went nuts. And I was like, but you went to sporting goods stores in Boston. And it was like, there was like a Bobby Orr jersey. There was a, you know, a Ted Williams. And there was a Doug Flutie. Like you...
Are you comfortable with that? Have you? I mean, you've been doing it for a long, long time. Look at all these people waiting outside to see you and talk to you. Are you comfortable with the fame?
I am. I mean, you know what's cool now for me is I'm living on the beach in Florida in a little beach town. So I can pick and choose when to throw myself back into that atmosphere and when I work. I work doing the NBC games for Notre Dame. You know, you put yourself back in an atmosphere where you're going to be recognized. Yeah, I'm fine with it. And you just can't go overkill on it and do it all the time because it burns you out.
Is there a quarterback that you see today that reminds you of you?
Boy, I thought it was Johnny Manziel. You know, when Johnny came out.
Yeah, a lot of people said that, right?
And what Johnny was doing in college, you know, I was a very disciplined kid, though, off the field.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I never got in trouble in my life. Maybe not to a fault. But, you know, his skill level, the things he did, the way he thought on
right.
the field.
The improvisation.
Yeah, the just the reaction of things. I loved watching him play, and I really wish he had gotten it rolling.
Do you think if he cleaned up, he could get a second shot? Do you think the NFL works that way?
I don't know if the NFL works that way, but I think what he really needed to do was come up here and play.
Right. Yeah.
And get on the field again. But no one wants to hand over the reins to a guy they can't trust. It's one thing to go out on the field and not play well. It's another to not be trusted with those, right? You know, to be trusted off the field, to be trusted with a leadership role on your team and all that. So, I mean, if he could have grown up here, they would have taken a shot at him because of his athleticism, and I think he would have been very successful.
Is that more amplified because of the position? Like, if you're a quarterback, know you don't have any rope. Like, you can't screw up at all.
You can't. And everyone on your team and everyone that is a fan of that franchise is looking to you as their savior. That's the, you know, the fans, they live through their quarterback and their team, and, you know, you're the focal point. So it's very difficult to be that way and get away with it, and then also to perform on the field. But there are other guys, you know, other positions that used to be able to get, you know, certain guys who get in trouble wasn't a big deal. They come up because they're not in total control of the offense or the defense, right, and they're doing all that. But nowadays with social media,
So
no one gets away with
it. It's
anything.
Just amplified, right? You can't – one misstep is one thing, but three is now – so like a guy like Russell Wilson was a guy that came into the NFL and people said, you know, he's too much of a freelancer. When you hear that, you must just roll your eyes and think, come on. Like,
Russell's a darn good quarterback, and he makes most of his plays – I mean, he does extend plays and make them off the scramble. He's much more athletic than people realized when he came in. And he's great at doing the play action stuff and throwing a deep ball. And so he can make his plays from the pocket. You have to, even if you're an undersized guy and you're really athletic, you have to be able to stand in there and deliver the ball and make all the throws. Once you can do that, and then, you know, you're reading coverage, you're getting your team in and out of protections, in and out of plays, getting your guys in a position to be successful. You've got to have the mental aspect of it, and you've got to be able to stand there and make the throws. Then the athleticism is a bonus.
Right.
Then you know, when things aren't there and something breaks down and you move and you make a couple first downs, it's all bonus, but you got to do the other part first.
When you're in the pocket, though, and you get crushed for the first time that night, how do you get back in? I mean, how do you go back into that huddle and say, guys, we got to regroup, but I'm not feeling it right now. I just got laid out, man.
I think, you know, it's the repetitive blows that through a course of a game start getting you antsy. You know, one or two, not a big deal. You're getting into the second half and you haven't scored or you haven't moved the ball well and you've been getting hit. Now you start thinking, oh, I got to move around. I got to make something happen. And that's when you get in trouble. You got to trust the guys up front and stand in there. Taking a shot, you know, you believe it or not, when you take that big shot, you're not hurting. You're pissed. You're just like, damn, I had an opportunity. I could have thrown the post, or I had a guy, I might have had a chance. And you just kind of, you're irritated with the fact you just lost 8 yards and you're moving on to the next play.
It's going to be a great night tonight. Have you seen the bobblehead?
I have seen it.
What do you like it? What do you think?
I think it's all right.
I think it's pretty good.
It's pretty close. I feel good.
It
could have been a lot worse.
That's right. A big win.
Exactly. It's great seeing you, man. Enjoy the evening. Enjoy the week in general. And congrats on an incredible career. And I think I can speak for everyone here at BMO and throughout Toronto. It's great to have you back up here.
It's great to be back. It's
good
fun
to see you, Doug.
There
good
he is.
To see you,
Doug Flutie. The great Doug Flutie joining us around the table. We're live at BMO Field. Red Blacks Argos tonight. You can hear it on TSN 1050. Watch it on TSN. Overdrive continues on the TSN Go app. Yeah! Overdrive continues, TSN 1050, and on the TSN Go app. Brian Hayes, Gordon Miller, we're live just outside of BMO Field, ahead of a big game tonight. The Argonauts playing host to the Red Blacks.
I'm going to tell you right now, if you left a helmet right here, Doug Flutie would put it on and want to go on the field.
He still looks like he could go out and play.
He looks kind of surferish, though. He's tan. He's got kind of blonde tips going on. He's like,
he's got the Flutie jersey on, too. I mean, as if people didn't know who he was. I mean, everyone's here tonight to see him effectively. I mean, the whole team's going to be here from 96 and 97, 97 in particular. But I don't think he needed the Flutie jersey. But he's wearing it with pride, and he seems like he's pretty happy to be back up here.
You know, it's funny. He always told me that he had more fun playing in the Canadian Football League than any other time in his career. I mean, obviously you don't grow up in the United States dreaming of playing in the CFL, but he had more fun playing in BC, Calgary, and Toronto than he did in the NFL.
Well, I mean, he was a superstar up here, right? Like in college, you would have been too, but you're talking about BC. He's from New England. I'm sure there was a ton of pressure that came with that. And up here, he probably felt like, okay, I got a new lease on life. People aren't as familiar with me. But he hit the ground running. I mean, he was a superstar right from the hop.
The game was made for him.
Absolutely. And yeah. But like he proved, the NFL game was made for him, too.
Yeah,
and, I mean, if you're a great talent, you're a great talent.
And the sad thing is, you wonder how much the NFL has learned because it still spits out.
But so many leagues still do that, Gord. I mean, the NHL, which we talk about a lot, they still, people reference Marner and Goudreau. Every scout will take the 6'4" guy over the 5'7" guy.
And the 6'4" guy will always get six chances to prove himself, and the 5'8" guy won't.
Exactly.
I mean, all he ever did was win. All Doug Flutie ever did was win.
Well, and he looks at you, you watch the tape, right? Like the NFL and the CFL, it's all about measurements, it's all about the combine. Yeah. You know, in the NFL, guys go to the combine. And they move up the board 15, 20, 25 spots because they ran a good 40. Meanwhile, you look at the tape, you're like, this guy's a dummy, can't play. But if he ran a good 40, he threw up the bench press, maybe he did the cones at a decent number, a decent clip, scouts get enamored with that. And that's the thing about football is there isn't enough tape because they don't play enough games. You know, the average college quarterback might start 20 games, maybe.
And a very conservative sport. Football is a very, very conservative sport.
Well, look at the Kaepernick situation.
Well, and I think you know, to tread in dangerous waters, but I mean, never mind Doug Flutie getting a chance. How many African American quarterbacks couldn't get a chance in the NFL and got one here?
Right? Well, Warren Moon's a perfect example.
Well, I mean, go back to Chuck Ealy in the 70s, Warren Moon, Danny Barrett. I mean, great quarterbacks who had, you know, Henry Burris just never got a chance. Now, I'm not saying it's the NFL is racist, but because certainly there are some teams that aren't, but I mean, it seems odd to me that that still persists today.
It's the same thing with coaches. I mean, the Rooney Rule is one of the more bogus, image-conscious rules.
It's bogus that it has to exist.
Well, of course.
So for those who don't know, the Rooney Rule means that the teams have to interview
at least one black prospective coach before they hand out the job.
I remember Cito Gaston saying when there was a playoff series where two black managers faced each other for the first time. And Cito said, I look forward to the day when that's not a story. But here we are in 2017 and still talking about African-American quarterbacks in the NFL not getting a chance.
Well, and the Rooney Rule, what is also, it's almost condescending because there's so many times coaches get hired before it's been posted, so to speak. I mean, they don't technically post it like your average job, but If Belichick became available and he decided, okay, I'm going to Tennessee, do you really think when they interviewed that black prospective coach, he really had a shot?
Right.
They did it because they had to. They did it because the league said, well, the Rooney Rule's here, so from an image standpoint, we have to pretend as if we're actually looking at this from an equal standpoint. But obviously that isn't the case. And in the NFL, I mean, there really are not a lot of black coaches, let alone GMs, let alone owners, for a league that is predominantly black.
Right.
I mean, outside of the quarterback position historically, I mean, you look at the majority of players in the NFL, African-Americans. We're live at BMO Field again tonight. Argos, Red Blacks, Jays back in action, back in town. Oakland, your favorite team.
Oakland,
here.
Love the Oakland A's. Are they in last place again?
I believe they're treading water.
So I believe they're in last place.
Yes,
they
are.
For the third or fourth consecutive year in their division?
They are 44-54. They happen to be tied with the Blue Jays right now.
But in their division.
In their division. They're in last place.
Yeah.
Only the White Sox are worse than the American
League. Believe would be the third straight year that Oakland would be in last place.
Ever since they traded Donaldson, they've been...
So Billy Beane gave away Josh Donaldson essentially for nothing.
Yeah.
Has a last place team.
Mm-hmm.
And is a genius.
Well, I mean, it can't be that simplistic, though. This guy's been running that operation for close to two decades.
Let's get down to it. Let's get down to Moneyball. And I think Michael Lewis, by the way, is a terrific author. He's written a book called The Undoing Project, which everyone should read. It's unbelievable. But sometimes he wants, you know, good guys and bad guys. So Moneyball doesn't talk about Zito, Mulder, and Hudson, three of the best pitchers in baseball, who were all found, by the way, by those scouts that everyone made fun of. Miguel Tejada was the American League MVP. I think he's mentioned four times in Moneyball.
It doesn't come up much.
Right. And the Mitchell Report on performance-enhancing drug use, when it came out, listed, I think it was 84 players. Eight of them were Oakland A's, current or former. So the Oakland A's were essentially running an open-air pharmacy in their clubhouse.
They weren't alone in that, let's be honest.
No, but eight of 84.
Okay, 84 eight. That got caught. 84
right,
that got
but
caught.
But eight of the 84 that got caught were Oakland A's.
I'm not disputing that, but
that's a disproportionate number.
Everyone was doing it.
If everyone was doing it, there were 84 players caught. Divide them through Major League Baseball, there should be three per team.
Okay.
They had eight.
Right.
Okay. So
but you agree guys don't always get caught even though they're still doing it.
So Balco in their backyard. Mm-hmm. Balco was in their backyard. And all these guys are beefing up and juicing, and they don't notice?
I'm sure they did. At the time, the rules were in place where they didn't have to notice or have to care about it.
All I'm saying is advanced stats may have had a role to play in Oakland's success, no question about it. But there's a whole bunch of other factors that were involved that aren't mentioned.
So you're anti-Moneyball.
I'm anti this narrative that Oakland somehow, you know, that the scouts were idiots, that their manager was an idiot. Art Howe was a great baseball man. Now, less so in the book, more the movie was awful to Art Howe. That movie, first of all, you know, the late Philip Seymour Hoffman played him as a lumpy, sort of out of shape. Art Howe was like a triathlete. Like this, you know,
well, that's the Hollywood, though. Hollywood angles. So the movie
made it sound Art Howe wasn't in the last year of his contract. There was a whole bunch of things that were wrong about that. And I just object to this idea that if you question Moneyball, you're anti-analytics. I'm not. But there was a whole bunch of other stuff going on with Oakland. And by the way, the success rate, you know, the Boston Red Sox have said, John Henry has said, they got too much into stats. They got two stats.
Well, I mean, a lot of people argue if you're going to focus on a team that actually applied the stats effectively, you should be focused more on the Red Sox
right.
in 2004 than the Oakland Athletics because the Red Sox actually won.
Right.
But to your point, the scouts, now I'm sure they looked at some of the underlying numbers, but they said, who's this Ortiz guy in Minnesota that they're just going to get rid of?
Right.
I would assume the scouts probably looked at him and said, I think he's got power. I think he can hit. And they picked him up, and then he became a superstar. I didn't need to look at the stats to know that Pedro Martinez is an all-time great player, that Manny's an all-time great
right.
player. Right. They also, Boston, unlike Oakland, had a huge payroll. They were paying guys a fortune, but I'm with you in terms of actually allotting where the focus should be and where we should be focused in terms of that end product. It, in a lot of eyes and a lot of in the opinion of a lot of people, it's 95% was just stats.
Right.
And what you're saying is it's never 95% just looking at the numbers and applying them.
It was less than 50. And those scouts that were portrayed so negatively in Moneyball, first of all, found a lot of the players that made the A's a contender year after year, then left and went to Texas and made the Rangers a perennial contender.
Well, the history books...
What was his name? Grady... I've got to look it up.
How people will look back on the career of Billy Beane, if that movie didn't happen... Like, the book was one thing. The movie brought it to a different level because it was Brad Pitt that was playing Billy Beane, and it was a huge success, and it was a cool movie. It was really well done. They put a lot of Hollywood spin into it.
Grady Fuse.
The history of Billy Beane, he will be credited maybe as the first guy to really push forward the idea that you could focus on different numbers and apply them to a team. But to your point, in recent history, it has not worked for him. They never won a World Series. So... Was he groundbreaking in a way? I'm sure,
sure
he was.
Sure they were.
But does it mean that he should go down in history as the greatest executive of all time? Of course not. Because at some point, other elements have to come into play, including what kind of trades you've made throughout your life. You mentioned the Donaldson one where he got rinsed. And how your team has been performing over the course of your career. And in recent years, the Athletics have been a doormat.
Right. So
now he might argue it's because I've never had ownership, and that was a big part of that movie as well. We didn't have the payroll, and the owner was always going to be tight.
Except John DePodesta, right, who was his assistant in Oakland, went to the Dodgers with an unlimited payroll and wrecked it.
But look at Andrew Friedman, what he's done going from Tampa to L.A. I know different characters we're talking about, but he has proven you can make it work, applying those smarts, applying the different logic.
I'm not saying don't use analytics at all. What I'm saying is there's this all or nothing sort of approach that you have to buy them completely or you're archaic and you know, scouts are easy to make fun of, and it's easy to say, because what analytics do is give everyone a seat at the table, right? You can all look at the numbers and say, you should do this, you should do that, you should do this. It's not that simple.
Baseball is more conducive to it than any other sport.
J.P. Ricciardi was an analytics guy. How did he do here?
It didn't work out so well for him.
So well?
Well, he had a team that won like 89 games. They happened to be in the American League East. Listen, I'm not a guy who's pumping the tires of J.P. Ricciardi very often, but there were some times where he had decent teams. When he went out there and got A.J. Burnett, they had Halladay, Burnett, they brought in B.J. Ryan. He actually did something as a manager in Toronto that a lot of different managers haven't been able to do, and that is acquire big-name free agents by simply selling them on the team in the market. Like that, you talk about where this team is going. And Shapiro and Atkins, they're deep in the numbers. They come from a small market where they never had the payroll. Now they're in a much bigger market with much more money. Not quite Yankees, Dodgers, Cubs
territory.
But this
team's in the toilet.
They're in the toilet. And now it's going to be intriguing to find out how they can actually build this team back up. Because a lot of people are looking at where the Jays are. And they're saying, you got to improve in left, you got to improve in right. I think you got to improve at short. Maybe you got to get rid of Morales and improve at DH. How are you going to do that if you don't want to trade future pieces? If you're not going to put
You've already traded your future pieces.
A lot of them. But I'm talking now Guerrero Jr., okay. Bichette, a couple of other guys who are currently in the system who I don't think they're going to put on the market. How do you improve? You got to find a way to sell your market, sell your team via free agency, and make a splash. Last year, they couldn't really do it. They jumped the gun on Morales. They gave him money that, quite frankly, is not looking that great right now. He's got two more years of 12 or 13 million.
But Smoke has found money.
Smoke was found money. That said, that was a guy who, I mean, he didn't have much leverage. He was barely playing. He's taken off. Full credit to them. They saw something in him. I'm not taking that away from him. But my point is, Shapiro and Atkins walked into Anthopoulos' team, a team that had been to the ALCS the year before, went to the ALCS their first year. Now they're a mess. Right. They want to retool. They want to improve. They want to be competitive next year. If you're not going to make trades, and it doesn't seem like they have a lot of options to make trades, you got to do it via free agency. How are they going to do that?
So the narrative I keep hearing is, well, it's bad luck and injuries.
That was applicable earlier in the year. They're healthy. Outside of Sanchez, they're totally healthy.
They can't score.
They can't pitch. They can't defend.
No, they can pitch okay. They can't score.
They can't do anything. They really can't do anything.
They have the fifth best ERA in the American League. That's not bad. It's okay, but here's what's happened to them. Last year, they were fourth in the major league in home runs. This year, they're 13th. They were ninth in runs scored in the major leagues last year. They're 27th this year. They went from fifth to 22nd in slugging percentage. They've grounded into 100 double plays. All of that, they're 13th in extra base hits. So it's not that their pitching's not good enough. They don't score.
I don't think their pitching is good enough. I still don't. Those stats don't add up to me. I mean, where their numbers are going,
Jose Bautista is striking out every 3.5 at bats.
Well, and again, defensively, they're one of the worst teams in the American League.
Now Aaron Judge does that too. Aaron Judge strikes out a lot, but he's got 35 home runs.
That's the thing. I mean, you can handle strikeouts if you're on pace for 40 plus home runs, 100 plus RBIs. You slug at a significant rate. I mean, Bautista's comments yesterday, I was reading them online. Yeah. Rob Longley was tweeting about a bunch of guys were, because they made a minor deal yesterday, picked up a minor league guy who may help them down the road. And Bautista was always the guy that you focused on in terms of what his comments were going to be leading up to the trade deadline. He was the spokesman for the clubhouse. He was the guy who was willing to step out and take a shot at Anthopoulos and shot at ownership. A few years ago, right before the All-Star game, I believe it was, maybe at the All-Star game, he said, we've got to do something here.
I think it was at the All-Star game.
I believe it was. Let's go. Like, we're good enough. Spend money. Make trades. Make us better because we believe we have a chance to win here. He did that a couple years in a row. Last year, I don't remember exactly what he said. The year before, prior to them making the moves, that's when he was talking. And then they acquired Price. They acquired Tulowitzki. He was a happy man. Now you look at what Bautista's saying. For a guy who is loaded with confidence, loaded with bravado and self-assuredness, for him to come out and say, I guess a trade, any shot in the arm can't hurt, he sounded so defeated to me.
And he's saying now he won't entertain, he's a 10-5 guy, so he won't entertain trade suggestions now. The non-waiver trade deadline is next Monday. Now, teams can make trades after that. But my question is, okay, so you want to trade Bautista. What are you getting back?
I think you have to get anything back. I don't even think it matters because your season's done. Bautista's done, you're opting out of the contract if you're the team. He's not coming back. So I guess what you have to ask yourself is, and I'm sure this is what they're going to be thinking of from a business standpoint, is there a business element to keeping him around and essentially sending him off? And try right. to load up on people coming out in September.
Watch Jose Bautista's last few at-bats as a Blue Jay.
And I would assume that has to be thought of. It should be thought of if you're in the business, which they are. Bautista may be thinking about it from a standpoint of, I'm not going to waive because I do want to send off. But here's what makes it dicey, is that the options are there for the team to bring him back. He is going to punch into his option and say, I want that $20 million next year and hopefully the $20 million after that because he's not going to get it anywhere else.
Right.
But the team, the way he's playing, the way he's performing, they're not possibly going to accept that option and bring him back. But if you start selling in September, hey, come watch Jose Bautista play his final games, what you're saying to him is, we're not bringing you back.
You got to worry less about selling September of 2017. You better worry about selling April of 2018.
Sure.
Don't forget, this is a thin baseball market. 7 years ago, the Toronto Argonauts had higher average attendance than the Blue Jays did.
If they're winning, it's not.
Right.
If they're winning, it's not.
But that's what I mean. It's a thin baseball market. They have to be winning. If they're the last place team in their division and they don't make significant upgrades in the offseason, what are you selling?
Well, you're selling what you said off the top. Injuries is what killed us. Bad luck is what killed us. That's not possibly going to happen again next year. Now, the question is that actually going to work? Or will it fall on deaf ears?
And Josh Donaldson going into the last year of his contract.
Mm-hmm. And he's going to want to get paid a lot of money. How do you convince the fan base you're actually going to spend it and bring him back? Because historically, this team has been averse to loading up on big contracts. I mean, the one you can think of is Vernon Wells, and it bit them.
It backfired on them.
It backfired to the point where they had to find a way to unload them. They got lucky. They did. Credit to Anthopoulos. But I think the sales pitch will be, everyone has down years. Let's not forget about the previous two where they went to the ALCS. We ran into injuries. We had a horrible start. Everyone underperformed for the most part. It's not going to happen again. It's on the fans to decide if they believe it or not. As for upgrades in the offseason, how do we know? I mean, we can't debate what we don't know yet. I don't know what they're going to do. I know the positions of need, so do they.
Right. They know, and everyone else does.
Everybody knows.
Right.
They got to hit. They need power. They need athleticism. They need youth.
Right. So the one thing is the players they gave up in those deals the last couple of years haven't really knocked it out of the park.
No.
They're not. It doesn't look like they gave up superstars.
Right. Outside of Syndergaard
yeah.
for Dickey, but that's back in 2012. That's
yeah.
5 years ago.
But really, the Yankees are great again because of their farm system. Now, the one thing that works against baseball teams is the way the draft works, where there's unlimited signing bonuses. So, I mean, you know who the best players are. The Yankees, the Red Sox, the Dodgers are going to pay those prospects the $15 million signing bonuses. The Blue Jays historically have not done that. And I've had a lot of guys go back in the draft. But they've got to build it through the farm system. That takes time.
Well, but how does that jive with the idea
it
of
doesn't.
Selling tickets
it
for
doesn't.
2018?
It doesn't.
No. So there's the elephant in the room.
Right.
How are they going to handle that? That's what no one has an answer to it. You know, there's so many different hypothetical angles and different roads that they could end up going down. But what if they weren't just unlucky?
What if they're just bad?
Exactly. What if they just got really old really quickly?
They haven't won a playoff. They haven't won a series. Not a playoff series. They haven't won a series since, what, early June?
Yeah.
In Seattle, right?
Well, and look how they came out of the All-Star break. That was a perfect time to recharge your battery, say the right things, 3-7. And you look at the run differential in this month, through 19 games, there's something like minus 65.
Right.
Like they're getting smoked. They lose 13-3 on Friday, 8-1 yesterday. They're not just losing. They're getting embarrassed.
No, they're getting slaughtered. And they've been outscored by almost 100 runs already this year.
Right. Which means, again, it's not just unlucky. It's not just a couple of injuries. They're healthy right now outside of Sanchez. This is the team that we were expecting to see back in the spring.
So bottom line, you agree that Moneyball is based on a false premise.
I think there was too much placed on the
thank
numbers.
Thank you.
I'll grant you that. Because, to your point, Zito, Mulder, and Hudson, the best 1-2-3 in baseball, never mentioned.
Drafted by Grady Fuson.
Never mentioned.
Drafted by that staff. There you go.
So are you thinking the Jays are going to win this series then because of how you feel about Billy Bean? I guess it doesn't matter. They're two bad ball clubs.
I really don't care.
It really doesn't make that much
of a
difference.
I really don't care who wins this series. I mean, you're not playing for the first overall pick anyway. Who
no,
cares?
You're not. No. Dirk Ahurst will join us, our Jays analyst, in about 20 minutes. We'll get his take on all of this. Dirk is a numbers guy. Dirk is a numbers guy. So it'll be interesting for you to apply that kind of questioning to Dirk to see how he responds.
So it could be a fight?
I hope.
Really?
If I can instigate a fight, this would be great. This is what we do, man.
I'm not sure I'm enjoying this.
Why not?
It's my first show with you. I don't know if I'm enjoying it or
not. Are you saying Andy wouldn't do that to you? Would Andy always have your back, or would she try to instigate
Andy's
a fight?
Andy's difficult, too, in a different sort of way.
Yeah. Andy can get in there and...
Yeah. I just think that, you know, maybe I need to get my own show.
So that's fine.
I can find a host I get along with.
It's open season, man.
Maybe I'm the problem.
Maybe it's time to look in the mirror.
Maybe
it's the Gord Miller
and
issue.
I'm not going to see the one from that picture of
back when you were 23?
No.
Okay. Maybe Frank Saravelli will show up.
Doug Flutie looks the same, though.
He's tanned. He looks like he's 5% body weight. Surfing. Can still get out there and chalk.
Is Pinball in the building yet?
No. I'm pretty sure he's still outside.
Wow.
Last time I checked, he was walking around. Maybe he finally got back in.
Are people outside listening? Yeah, they are.
Yeah.
Can someone bring me a hot dog?
Smoking darts, eating hot dogs.
Can I get a hot dog? Someone bring me a hot dog?
Dirk's
I'll pay top dollar.
We got to get into the NBA stuff, too.
Kyrie Irving stuff, whether
he wants out. If he does, is it because of LeBron? Now there's reports out there that LeBron's camp may be leaked, the idea that he demanded the trade.
It's like Game of Thrones.
It really is.
I mean, right?
Yeah. And this is what I'm looking for. It's content, controversy. I bask in this. We're live at BMO Field. Ottawa Red Blacks, Toronto Argonauts tonight. You can hear it right here on TSN 1050. Overdrive continues on the TSN Go app. Live at BMO Field, and we're getting closer to kickoff, but there's been a lot of people down here.
Yeah.
And some gritty characters. I mean, this is what we're looking for. This is our kind of crowd. This is an Argos crowd, BMO Field, a couple of Jersey guys. How do you feel about Jersey guys? I mean, you're an unbiased.
So my favorite, one of my favorite Twitter sites is Full Kit Wankers. So these are people that don't just wear the shirt to soccer games. They wear the shorts, the matching socks, and often, you know.
Are they wearing cleats?
Yeah, or cleat-ish type shoes. Mm-hmm. Like, they go to the game dressed like Cristiano Ronaldo. So a full kit wanker.
Right? Yeah.
Some of the pictures, like, you'll see some guy at, like, a Celtic Ranger game, the old firm in Scotland.
In Glasgow.
Yeah. You'll see some old Scottish guy, like, with a pot belly, smoking a dart, like, fully decked out in the Celtic uniform.
And he is looking for a fight.
Oh.
He can't wait to fight somebody.
He's got the boiler going. Oh. He's got the green shorts on. Like, so I'm okay with wearing a jersey to the game. Now, most football fans don't wear football pants to the game because that's, you know, let's be honest.
That would be stupid.
Let's be honest. Spandex is a privilege, not a right.
Right.
Right. So, and hockey fans don't wear hockey pants and shin pads to games. But I do see people, like, at baseball games wearing, like, you know, baseball pants.
It's the worst look going.
It really is,
like,
bad.
The fact that they make managers wear it, like Gibbons is out there.
It is funny. Like Tommy Lasorda in a baseball uniform.
Why is that necessary? like let him wear Lululemon pants or something.
I used to know all the manager's number.
Based on...
Like Tommy Lasorda wore number 10.
Right.
Like they give the manager a number.
Well, Gibbons, you'd never... He's always got the tarp.
The windbreaker. What number does John Gibbons wear?
I think it's in the 50s, but I don't even know. Like I
what
don't
was
even
Cito?
Focus
what
on
was Cito?
It.
Cito was 11, maybe.
Yeah, I thought he was 10
Bell.
Or something.
He was 10 because George Bell was 11. Yeah,
yeah. But that another. Why does a manager need a number?
Yeah, but no. When
What's
I when
the
I,
point?
When I like yeah, put on like there's a guy with an old school Flutie jersey on there. That's like I always like when people dig out the old like I always wonder
the
like
vintage ones. Are
I always
great.
Want to ask people, you know, because where we sit in the rink, right? When I'm calling games, you see fans sweaters. And you always just say like you know to a guy in Buffalo like. What made you buy that jersey? Like what did you think that a Tony Ludman sweater was a good idea?
It every market has it, and that guy will go down with the ship wearing that thing to the sporting.
Like he's
events.
Not related to Tony Ludman.
No,
he
man.
Doesn't know Tony Ludman. He didn't live next door to him. He just went out like he's a Leaf fan.
Yeah,
right. And he bought like a you know. Name someone from the, you know, whatever.
Whoever it is.
Yeah.
Alex Ponikarovsky.
Yeah, he's got a Ponikarovsky sweater.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why would you possibly do that?
He's got a Nick Antropov sweater.
Well, when they were that bad, those two were kind of the poster boys for the
right.
team. I know a guy, a buddy of mine, has a Ponikarovsky jersey.
You know what? go out and get a Johnny Bauer. Like,
you'd rather go old school.
Yeah,
than,
like, pick a great retired player than an average.
I wonder if you. I guess you could buy those. You could go in and be like, I'm looking for a Bauer jersey. They'd have to make it for you. Wouldn't be off the rack.
You know what's funny though? There's some in some sports you can't. Like, you can't get a Michael Jordan.
Why not?
Jordan owns the right. So when you go to the Bulls store,
of course he does.
You can't buy a Jordan 23.
Well, outside of him, get a Pippen 33. Do whatever you got to do.
Right.
We're live at BMO Field. I want to get back into that. Like, jersey guy, your take on it, call-in games.
Which one do you wear? What do you have?
I'm not a jersey guy. I have an Aaron Rodgers knockoff Packers jersey. That's it. Everything else has been gifted to me. We'll pick that up in the 6 p.m. hour. Dirk Hayhurst is going to join us as well. We'll get back into the Jays.
Does 2-for-1 deliver? I'm hungry.
Yeah.
I'm channeling O-Dog here because I'm hungry.
Bring
me food.
Make it happen. We're live at BMO Field. Hour 3 up next. Gordon Miller kicking around. I'm Brian Hayes, TSN 1050.